Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. If you're working from home right now, you might be looking around at your space and thinking, it's time. It's time to do a little reorganizing. My next guest has been called the Get Your Life Organized Guy, and he's here now to help us tackle some of our most daunting challenges that'll be hard to avoid while we're staying at home for the next few weeks. Peter Walsh is the author of several books, including Let It Go, Downsizing Your Way to a Richer, Happier Life, which was released early this year, and I'm so glad that he's back on our show. Hi, Peter.
Allison, I was there just a few weeks ago, and I thought I wouldn't see you or hear from you for a while. My heart was heavy and sad, and here we are again. I'm so delighted. What have you done? I was there just a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden I turn around and the world's gone to hell. What have you done? What's happened?
You know what? I think that this is just an opportunity. This is an opportunity for everybody. That's the way I'm choosing to look at it.
I have to say, I love you. I was just listening to the interview with Jordan, and in a time of so much crappy news, my heart was so just elated listening to how excited she was, and you are such a light at the moment, interviewing people who just are so joyous, and it really is a message to everyone. Instead of getting bogged down, and it definitely is tough and traumatic times, but we have to look to the light and look to the things that really do bring us joy at the moment. So thank you.
It's so true. I was walking down. We'll talk about organizing in a minute. But while we're having this conversation,
let's get to all that crap in a minute. Let's talk about fun and interesting things. You were walking where?
I was walking down the street. And this is before the whole clampdown went in. And this woman said to me, and people were still inside, she said, "Isn't it great to walk down the street in New York and just be able to walk down the street?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess there's a glass is half full to everything." And she said, "Honey, if you have a glass and something in it, then it's full. At least you have a glass."
And I decided... Are we talking about your love for vodka at the moment, Allison?
No, that's Friday segment. Okay.
Every day is Friday now, let's be honest. You know, it's really interesting because I was talking with someone last night about this, and we will get through this. We will get through this together. But I think one of the things that I wonder about this, and I'm talking to a lot of people about this at the moment, I think this is going to be an incredible opportunity for all of us to hit the global reset button. I think that what I'm seeing is that a lot of people are looking at, I work in the world of people's possessions and their clutter and their stuff. I think a lot of people are looking at what's important, what is it that brings them joy and happiness, and how have they been spending time? And a lot of people have been investing in the acquisition of stuff rather than the development and the deepening of relationships. And that has been flipped at the moment. And I think a lot of people are re-examining what's important in their lives. And I think that's what's going to be the reset button for many of us. And we're seeing that being alone can be such a horrible thing. And for many of us, me included, we're reaching out to those peoples where we've let relationships slip, and where we've let relationships perhaps kind of devolve to a level that we're embarrassed about. And I, for one, have let that happen for many relationships, and I'm really working very hard to get back to a place that's more healthy and better for my soul. And screw COVID-19 and screw all the horrible things it's doing in the world, and I choose to look to the better things that we can do. And that means to try to support our frontline workers and to stay home and wash my hands more and try to get back in contact with the people that I love and feel really important for.
I think that reset button is a great way to think about it. And, you know, you mentioned how people are feeling and emotional health and mental health. There is a connection between clutter and mental health. What is it, and how should we think about cleaning up our space and organizing our space as self-care?
Sure. Look, it's very interesting. I've been doing this for nearly 20 years, and anecdotally, 20 years ago when I started doing this, it became obvious, and certainly from the clients I had, that when people decluttered their spaces, they were saying, I felt much better. my health improved, my weight decreased, my attitude and outlook got better, but there was no science to back that up. And I wrote a book at the time, which ended up being a New York Times bestseller, but it was a little tongue-in-cheek, and it was called Does This Clutter Make My Butt Look Fat? And and it was very much about what I saw as the anecdotal relationship between clutter and weight gain. And it was only in the last few years that we've discovered that there is this massive correlation between the hormone, the enzyme in our body called cortisol. And when we're in a cluttered relationship, particularly for women, we're seeing that our cortisol levels rise. And with higher cortisol levels, very much associated with cluttered environments, that it affects our stress, our weight, our sleep, our heart health, our general wellness and being. And so I think at the moment where many of all of us are in self-isolation, that it's really important to look at our environments, because there is virtually, well, there is nothing we can do outside our walls. And I'm not suggesting that we should go into a huge decluttering mode, but it is really important. And there are some simple things that everyone can do inside their walls that can really help them get some control and exercise some control and improve their general wellness and health and well-being, that they will see some immediate changes for them and their family. And I'm really advocating those simple things right now.
Well, let's talk about those. Given this moment, what are the first three simple things people could do to get started?
Okay, these may sound really dumb and silly, but here they are. Number one, when you get up of a morning, make your bed. Make your bed and tidy your bedroom. Number two, clean the dishes in the sink. Clean your kitchen so that when you look around your home, there is a general sense of order and control. They're the first two things. So that when you walk into your bedroom, it looks orderly. When you walk into your kitchen, it looks like whoever lives there is in control. They're the first two things. And the third thing is get out of your sweats. Get out of your sweats right now. Get out of your sweats, people, and have a shower. Okay, you too, Allison. I'm sick and tired of seeing that.
No. I have a rule. On the show, I've said this since day one, that working at home, you have to put on one piece of clothing that has a button, zipper, or snap.
Yeah,
every
but
day.
Let's be honest, Allison. That thing you bought from that website we're not allowed to talk about doesn't qualify.
No, I'm a big believer of getting up. I've got mascara on. I'm ready to go, even though I'm on the radio.
Both you and I have great faces for radio, so we're not allowed to talk about that. But you're absolutely right. Get up, have a shower, and get dressed as though you're going to work or you're leaving the house. You have to do that. Make your bed, wash the dishes, get up and have a shower, and get dressed so that immediately you don't look like you're a slob laying on the couch all day. Because then straight away, you look like you're preparing for the day. My brother-in-law, who has a very serious job, he lives in New Jersey. He has a home office, and he works. His office is 6 feet from the kitchen, and they have a very funny thing every day. He will text his wife and say, "Leaving the office now. I'll be home at 5." And then suddenly he walks around from the home office to the kitchen, and his wife says, "Oh, I didn't expect you home so early." Stupid, silly things. But the thing is, you create a sense of order in your home that's important for you, your partner, and your children. And that leads, and I know I've said just three simple things, but that leads to perhaps the most important thing, which is to establish routines. Establish some routines in your home, which is incredibly important, especially if you have children. Children are used to getting up at a certain time, going to school at a certain time, having recess at a certain time, being picked up or getting up the bus at a certain time. And if those routines fall to pieces, then they immediately sense that, that things are in chaos. Make your bed, do the dishes, have a shower, get out of the sweats and get dressed as though you're leaving the house and going to work or the kids are going to school, and establish clear routines. Do that and do it today. And the fifth thing, perhaps the most, one of the most important things, is establish a media diet. Mm-hmm. Establish a media diet today, because we know very little about COVID-19 except it's highly contagious. You have to stay at home. If you go out, only go out for essential things. Wash your hands as regularly as possible, and we will get through this. Beyond that, we don't know much. Most of the media is spewing fear and anxiety. I'm not saying bury your head in the sand. Take a media diet, because by the end of watching, you know, a news broadcast, your cortisol level and your stress level and your anxiety level is in overdrive, and you need to pull back from that, because otherwise that level of stress will stay with you for at least 3 or 4 or 5 hours.
My guest is Peter Walsh. He is an organizing and cleaning expert. We're talking about what to do while we're all home. So the questions are coming in, Peter. This is Emily, and she wrote, I live in an old railroad apartment with no real closet space and lots of weird crowded corners, radiators, and other obstacles. How can we create a space that flows and doesn't feel like crazy clutter with visible storage?
Okay. Was it Emily?
Emily,
one of the difficult things is you only have the space you have. And so it's tough when you're living in a weirdly shaped space. I'm hoping that you have some kind of hanging space or some kind of space where you can hang clothes. You have to accept that the space that is there is the space that your landlord, karma, and the universe has given you. So in this weird time, you now have to start your own little fashion show and go through each piece of clothing that you have and put them into piles that I love a lot, I kind of love, oh my God, what was I thinking? And the ones I love a lot, I would find, you know, the best space for those. I kind of love, I would put those into, you know, nice folded piles. And the third lot, I would put aside ready to let out of the house. Once this is over, I would find hanging racks, some decent movable hanging racks that could also double as kind of not barriers, but dividers in your apartment. Consider using long tensile string or cable that you could hang from the ceiling, and also use that as dividers with rods. I would also look at drawers or standalone drawers that could also be used as dividers to create kind of different sections in the apartment.
Oh, that's
you need
a
to
good
kind
idea.
Of get creative. You need to get creative. I would also look on the internet. Google small space storage, and you'll find a lot of really great ideas for that as well.
My guest is Peter Walsh. He's helping us think about organizing our homes during this time of social distancing. We'll have more with Peter after the break. You can tweet questions to us at @allofitwnyc. We're back with Peter Walsh. He is the author of several books, including Let It Go, Downsizing Your Way to a Richer, Happier Life, was released earlier this year, full of so much good information. I do want to talk to you about that not all clutter is the same. And you make this point on your Twitter feed, which people should definitely check out. You have had this daily clutter challenge. And yep. you really help us think about it in a different way. For example, you describe something called memory clutter. What's memory clutter?
Look, let me back it up one little bit. Broadly, for me, and I'll get to your question in just a sec. For me, clutter is not just the physical stuff. Clutter for me is anything that gets between you and the way you want to be living, between you and the life you want for you and your family. And so that's why I think, for example, I said, you know, take a media diet. People say to me, well, why is that? What's that got to do with decluttering? Well, if you're getting stressed and anxious about too much media, then that's, for me, clutter. And so you need to back away from that. If not having a routine is causing chaos in your house, then for me, that's clutter, and you need to deal with that. Mm. So I just want to explain that clutter is much broader, in my definition, than just the physical stuff. But when we get to the physical stuff, clutter has various forms. For example, the two main types of clutter, one is what I call memory clutter. And that's the stuff in your home or in your life that reminds you of an important person or achievement or event from the past. And the fear is that if you let go of that object, let's say it's something you inherited, or it might be all those drawings that your children did in school, it might be your wedding dress, or it might be the college books on your shelf that have been sitting there for 15 years, or it might be the draft of a novel you tried to write 20 years ago. The fear is that if you let go of those objects, you will lose the memory. Or worse still, that in letting go of that object, you will dishonor the memory of the person who gave that to you. So that's one kind of physical clutter. The other kind is what I call I might need it one day clutter. Yes. Yeah, I know you laughed when I first told you this too, and I can't quite work out why. You always give me that guilty little giggle, and I need to come to your house and check this out. But I might need it one day clutter is the stuff that we hold on to in the event of a whole lot of imagined futures. And that's all the recipes you hold on to, because you know one day you are going to cook that Martha Stewart gravy from that Martha Stewart book that you recipe you ripped out of a magazine in 1998. Or, you know, and I've got to tell you, I might need it one day, clutter. The best example of that is the fact that no one in the United States is going to have to buy another roll of toilet paper until 2028. God, what is everyone doing with all those rolls of toilet paper? Like what making some special chicken fondue or something. What the hell? But the two main types of clutter, physical clutter, are memory clutter or I might need it one day clutter. And when you're dealing with people and helping them remove clutter from their homes, you generally are faced with those two kinds of things, those two kinds of objects. And helping people deal with those two kinds of things demand different strategies.
I always giggled because of the I might need it one day clutter is because, and I've shared this with you, you know, my parents were born in 1929, so they were Depression era children. And
same as mine.
They just, I might need that one day. I might need that one day. And you know what that leads to. Hey, we've got this.
Well, it leads to you wading through a house full of crap after they go, saying, why the hell did Mum need 400,000 yogurt containers? That's what it leads to.
She might need it one day. Let's go to Myra. Myra is asking, how do I get rid of the boxes of photographs and negatives accumulated over many years? She doesn't want to spend money on this. She wants to try to do this herself, and she says not all need to be kept. So that's kind of a two-parter.
Myra, there's a great app called Google Photo Scan, I think it's called. It's funny you ask, because I actually have a box of family photos sitting right here beside my desk. It's an app you can get on your phone, great to use. You simply hold it above the photo and it helps you scan the photo into your phone, which then immediately uploads to Google Photos. And then I'm doing that with a whole lot of family photos that I have. My view is photos have this weird thing of creating massive amount of guilt. I'm scanning the best of the photos that I have, making photo books and then sending them to my siblings. For the rest, I'm putting them in a box and sending selections of them to my siblings, and for the rest I'm just letting them go. Look, I don't think you can ever go through all of the photos that we have, and if you have brothers and sisters, I would just send them off to them with a note, hope you enjoy, because the truth is our parents held all these photos, and at some stage they looked at them and said, hey doll, who's this standing with Mum and Dad? No one knew. And now you look at the photos and say, hey doll, who's this standing with Mum and Dad and Grandma and Grandpa, and nobody knows. my view is get the best of the best photos, make digital copies, put them into photo books and send them around. And for the rest, accept the fact that you really, you know, you don't need to or want to spend the rest of your life wading through photos you don't know who's in them. But the ones you do know, you know, enjoy, write the names on the back or, you know, add tags and send them to family and friends. And for the rest, take a deep breath and let them go.
What is a wrong reason for letting something go? We've been talking about all the right reasons for letting something go. Is there a wrong reason?
That's a great question. What's the wrong reason? Revenge? Spite? You know, I've had people get rid of things just to spite a family member. You know, doing that kind of thing is like taking poison and expecting, you know, eating poison and expecting someone else to die.
Right.
You know, and I've seen that happen. You know, a wrong reason, I don't know, anger, spite, envy, you know, they're all the wrong reasons for letting stuff go. I've never been asked that question before.
Somebody is asking, says, I need this, and now is the time. However, I'm worried that when I start the garbage purge, that the worry that you're going to throw away something that's really important when you're living with generations of collection. How do you get over that worry?
Yeah, you know, it's not a yes-no game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a binary thing. Look, you're an adult. We're adults, and you have to make an informed decision. You know, and sometimes you are going to let go of things that you might need, and sometimes you are going to let go of things that you'll have regret for. That's life. You know, sometimes you are going to do things that you wish you hadn't, but you can't live your life being fearful that you are going to have a regret. I mean, that's called, you know, making an adult decision about stuff. And you can't live your life in fear of that. Look at the object, make an informed decision, and if you have an intuition that you might need it, and if that intuition comes from a place of honesty and kind of seriousness, honesty is probably the best word, then hold on to it. But if when you look inside yourself and that sense that you might need it is really coming from a place of fear, then you've got to ask yourself, why am I living in this place of fear? Why are my decisions coming from a place of fear? You know, I recently was asked by a woman, you know, I gave a talk. Sorry, I almost said where and who it was. I recently gave a talk and a woman put up her hand and said, you know, my mother on her deathbed said to me, promise me you will never let go of this china cabinet. And she had a china cabinet that weighed probably 200 pounds, had china that her grandmother had given to her mother on her wedding, you know, she'd gotten on her wedding day. It was the most god-awful pattern. It was in this most god-awful china cabinet, and she had carted it across country three or four times on moves. And her mother on her deathbed had made her promise. And I said to her, how many times have you brought it back and forth? Four times, back and forth, cross country. And I said, why did you hold on to it? She said, because my mother made me promise. And I said, yeah, but why did you do it? She said, because I was so frightened of my mother. And I said, and what do you want to do with it? And she stood there and looked at me and said, I want to push it off a cliff.
Wow.
And I said, well, why don't? And I said, so why don't you? And she said, what do you think I should do? And I said, no. What do you want to do with it? And I said, I want to push it off a cliff. I said, well, there's your answer. So you have to look into yourself and ask yourself where, you know, people ask me to often give them permission that they won't give themselves. And I've diverged a little bit from the question that I was asked, but where is your answer? Where is your motivation coming from? If it's coming from a genuine belief that you may want and need this in the future, it's not my job to tell you to let go of it. But if your desire is coming from a place of fear or from someone else compelling you, especially if someone compelling you from beyond the grave, no one who loves you wants you to suffer or hold on to stuff, particularly stuff from beyond the grave, that's not love, that's manipulation. Then you've got to ask yourself, do I really want to hold on to this?
Peter, I can't wait till I can see you in person again.
I can't wait till I can share your bottle of vodka with you. That half full glass, I'm ready to knock that off with you, Alison. It's always such a delight to talk to you.
Thank you, Peter.
Wonderful. And listen, nobody says this to you enough.
You got five seconds.
Such a wonderful show. And you do a great job. Thank you.
Oh, I like that in that 5 seconds. This is all of it.